Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Tonight on The Readout, an absolutely stunning 24 hours of legal developments, three big cases, and at the center of them all, Donald Trump and his unlawful attempts to get in power and stay in power. First, in the state of New York, one of the star witnesses in Trump's criminal trial was back on the stand for a third day of testimony. The prosecutors finished their questioning of former national security and former National Enquirer publisher David Pecker, where he acknowledged that the purpose of catching and killing Playboy model Karen McDougal's story about an affair with Trump was to help Trump during the 2016 election cycle. And Pecker said that he was aware that he was breaking campaign finance laws. Pecker also testified that he discussed McDougal with Trump while he was in the White House. This comes less than a day after 18 people were indicted in Arizona for their roles in an attempt to overturn Trump's loss in the 2020 election there, including 11 fake electors who submitted a document to Congress falsely declaring that Trump won the state, along with several Trump aides, including Rudy Giuliani, Mark Meadows, and Boris Epstein. Trump himself was not charged, but was referred to as an unindicted co-conspirator. And as all of this was happening in Washington, D.C. today, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments on Trump's claim that presidents have absolute immunity to essentially do whatever they want in office, crimes included, as long as it's, quote, an official act, which, according to Trump's lawyer, includes potentially staging a military coup or ordering the assassination of political opponents. Yes, that is a real argument that he tried to make.
Well, he's gone. Let's say this president who ordered the military to stage a coup, he's no longer president. He wasn't impeached. He couldn't be impeached. But he ordered the military to stage a coup. And you're saying that's an official act.
I think it would depend.
That's immune.
I think it would depend on the circumstances, whether it was an official act. If it's an official act, there needs to be impeachment and conviction beforehand because the framers viewed the that kind of
if it's an official act, is it an official act?
If it's an official act, it's impeachment.
Is it an official act?
On the way you've described that hypothetical, it could well be. I just don't know. You'd have to, again, it's a fact-specific, context-specific determination.
That answer sounds to me as though it's like, yeah, under my test, it's an official act. But that sure sounds bad, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly sounds very bad.
Yeah, sounds really bad. As to most legal experts and humans here on Earth One, this may seem like an absolutely absurd concept to even entertain in the country's highest court. But after nearly 3 hours of questioning, it appears that even as the court seems skeptical of the idea of absolute immunity, a handful, if not all, of the conservative justices are seemingly open to the argument that presidents are indeed entitled to at least some form of immunity from criminal prosecution, meaning they very well could remand the case back to D.C. Circuit Court for further proceedings, which would, you guessed it, delay Trump's federal election interference trial even further, all but guaranteeing that it will not be heard before the November election. But if you take a step back, these three stories essentially all have the same bottom line. Donald Trump allegedly used unlawful tactics to win the presidency in 2016 through hush money payments. And after he did win, he tried to remain in office unlawfully in 2020 after losing, allegedly conspiring to overturn the results of a Democratic election by way of fake electors, something that ultimately culminated in an insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. And even as we are just months away from another election, where the same guy is once again a nominee for the same office, the Supreme Court is wasting time having an intellectual debate about whether or not any of that is actually illegal. Make it make sense, because the stakes could not be higher, something Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson aptly pointed out during today's arguments.
What I'm, I guess, more worried about, you seem to be worried about the president being chilled. I think that we would have a really significant opposite problem if the president wasn't chilled. If someone with those kinds of powers, the most powerful person in the world, with the greatest amount of authority could go into office knowing that there would be no potential penalty for committing crimes. I'm trying to understand what the disincentive is from turning the Oval Office into, the seat of criminal activity in this country.
Joining me now is Congressman Jamie Raskin of Maryland, a former member of the January 6th Select Committee. Congressman, thank you for being here. And you know, I hope you will join me in this new reality. Because can we now just stop pretending that when the Supreme Court meets to hold oral arguments and to make decisions, that they are even thinking about the Constitution? This Supreme Court majority, Leonard Leo 6, are so clearly politicians. The only difference between them and politicians like yourself is that you're honest about it. You are a Democratic politician. They are Republican politicians trying to achieve Republican goals. They didn't even pretend today that they had some constitutional argument. Even as a layperson, I didn't even hear them try. What I heard was them saying, we're going to make sure that Donald Trump is protected from prosecution, the end, and what are you going to do about it? Your thoughts.
Well, there are politicians who are not even subject to popular election, unlike me. They should move the Supreme Court over to the RNC headquarters because they're acting like a bunch of partisan operatives. The most astonishing thing for me today was Justice Alito's question. He actually asked whether holding a president criminally accountable for actual crimes committed, whether, you know, murder or coup or you name it, whether holding them accountable would actually encourage them to stage more violent coups to stay in office to avoid prosecution, which buys completely into Donald Trump's narcissistic criminal worldview. I mean, for all of American history, we've said presidents are subject to criminal prosecution if they commit crimes. That's why Gerald Ford pardoned Richard Nixon. That's why Bill Clinton agreed to give up his law license with the bar for 5 years so he wouldn't face criminal prosecution. Now they say, well, if you're really mean to Donald Trump and you hold him accountable the way every other American citizen is accountable, then he'll really overthrow the government. He'll really bring out the big guns, and we can't afford that. And that's a kind of masochistic capitulationism to Donald Trump's authoritarianism. Of course, we've got to hold the president accountable to the law. I mean, it's the basic premise of our law that nobody is above the law, including the president. And when they say, oh, well, you can impeach and convict him and then you could prosecute him, again, that twists the language and turns it upside down in the Constitution. It says, even if you're impeached and convicted, nevertheless, you can still be prosecuted and tried and convicted and punished, presupposing that, of course, the president is subject to criminal law. And now we've got a bunch of justices who are asking questions that indicate that they are as corrupted as members of Congress who I serve with. You know, when we get through this period, this miserable period of American history, and we will get through it, and we're going to beat them all in November, which is the only solution to this nonsense, these people are going to be fit only for selling incense and flowers at Dulles Airport.
Well, what is the solution? Because, you know, it's a big if we get through this. They're trying to seemingly engineer a Republican victory so that the two oldest conservatives there, Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito, can retire and be replaced by 30-year-old versions of themselves. That seems obvious, right? The bribe is sort of implied. But what legislatively can be done? I mean, Brett Kavanaugh has already gotten away, perhaps, with criminal activity. So he already feels a certain impunity. He got on the court, having been credibly accused of a sexual assault. That didn't matter. He wasn't even investigated. Clarence Thomas was credibly accused of also being a sex pest. He got away with that. I mean, they themselves, live with impunity. Is there anything that might be done, could be done, if Democrats were to take back the House and have enough Senate votes? Should any of them be impeached? Because it's clear corruption. It's so obvious.
Well, the American people have to insist upon the rule of law here. The president's primary job, as a Republican judge on the D.C. Circuit put it, is to take care that the laws are faithfully executed, not completely betrayed and defeated. And she said it would be strikingly paradoxical if the person who's supposed to be taking care that the laws are faithfully executed, including all the election laws and the 12th Amendment and the 20th Amendment, which says you serve four years in office and you leave by noon on January 20th. If that the person who's supposed to be enforcing the law is overturning the law, then we really don't have a constitutional democracy anymore. So the people have got to insist upon that. And what's happening, Joy, as I see it, is that as Donald Trump and his various January 6th aiders and abettors are being exposed now for what they did, finally, on January 6th, 2021, and the factual case is just crashing in on them all over the country, now they're shifting to the law to say, oh, well, of course, the president is not really held accountable under the law. And they're buying into Trump's argument that there's this absolute presidential immunity. Where did that come from? The stork brought it. That is not in the Constitution. That's the very opposite of our Constitution, and it's the opposite of the impeachment judgment clause.
Well, then what's the answer? Legislatively, you're in Congress. Is it expanding the court? Is it putting 15 members on the court, as our friend Ellie Mastal and others have said, expand the court? Like, what can be done to rein them in? Because at this point, they're stripping the 20th century reforms of the Warren Court and others down to the sparks. Like, we're almost going to have nothing left of the revolutionary American century. But before they're done, we'll be back to the mid-1800s legislatively and have a king.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's the problem. We could build big political majorities in the country, and we must do that to restore the Voting Rights Act, which they eviscerated in Shelby County versus Holder. We can pass national legislation to restore Roe versus Wade and protect women's right to choose, and we must do that. But all of it could be appealed back to this right-wing reactionary Supreme Court. So we will have to take up the questions you're raising, but we've got to go one step at a time. You're several chess moves ahead of me, Joy. We've got to win this election, and we've got to go out and organize the whole country to understand that democracy's on the line and freedom is on the ballot, and our major weapon for constitutional self-defense at this moment is this election and getting everybody out to vote and to participate and then to defend the election results.
Congressman Jamie Raskin, constitutional scholar and a politician who actually admits that he is a politician and a friend of the show. I appreciate you, sir. Thank you very much. Let's bring in Ellie Mastal, the aforementioned justice correspondent for The Nation, and Kenji Yoshino, professor of constitutional law at NYU School of Law. Let me just read a little bit of your piece, Ellie, because it spoke my soul and I reposted it on Threads. Hopefully everyone will read it all there or on The Nation. You wrote this, and this spoke my whole spirit. At this point, people who expect anything less than the maximum partisan thuggery possible from the Republican justices are not paying attention, or worse, they're actively lying to themselves and the American people about what the Roberts Court has become. The question has long since ceased being whether the court will help Trump. The question is only how it will go about doing it. Say more.
Can we speak as adults for
please,
a second?
Please.
Because nothing that happened today with the Supreme Court being in the tank for Donald Trump is surprising
at
to
all.
You.
No.
It's not surprising to me.
At all.
It's not surprising to your viewers at home. You know why? Because we're not stupid, all right? Donald Trump called his shot months ago. He said, my Supreme Court justices will never let this happen to me. And he was absolutely right.
Yep.
So with that information, my question to the American people is now, what are you prepared to do? Because the Supreme Court has exposed itself as a partisan institution full of hacks that will do everything in their power to protect Donald Trump and make sure that a Republican can be elected, not just in the next election, but in every election going forward.
Yeah, I mean,
so what are we going to do about that? And my answer to that, obviously, is that you cannot do anything in this country unless you expand the Supreme Court, to take away their power, and as you say, start removing some of these conservative justices who have already expose themselves as criminals and liars.
And in many sense, also perjurers before the United States Senate, when they got up and said stare decisis and lied about respecting precedent when it came to Roe v. Wade, lied to the faces of senators and got away with it. Professor Yoshino, today, Elena Kagan, and again, I'm just listening to this as a regular schmuck. Okay, I'm not a lawyer, although I hang out with them on TV. But even listening to it, I didn't even hear them try on the conservative side to make a constitutional argument. There were, once or twice they said Marbury versus Madison just to make it look good, like they did their homework. But they weren't even trying to pretend that they had some basis in the Constitution for what they were saying. They were just saying, well, you know, maybe if we remanded, how would this help us? How, they were literally just trying to help Trump's lawyers with the case, to the point where Elena Kagan got the Trump lawyer to admit that he thought a coup, staging a coup, would be illegal. Your thoughts?
Yeah, that was actually, you're hitting the nail on the head, because that was the most alarming part of the oral argument. So this parade of horribles that the liberal justices and some of the conservative justices were putting before Trump's lawyer, he was completely unfazed by that. So this kind of normalizes extremism. So yeah. As many of your viewers will recall, in the D.C. Circuit, the killer question that Judge Florence Pan, right, asked of John Sauer, Trump's lawyer, was, if the president ordered SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a political opponent, would that individual would the president be liable criminally, right? To which the answer is, of course, yes, they would, right? Yeah. No one is above the law, right? Yeah. But John Sauer's answer was, well, it depends on whether he was impeached and then convicted, right? And so at that point, my jaw's on the floor because I think like that is like an insane reading of the impeachment clause, the impeachment judgment clause. But it's also like a very, very weird, you know, response that goes right to the rightmost edge, right, of political extremism. So I thought he's going to clean it up when he gets to the Supreme Court. He's going to practice this. He's going to move this. Yeah. He's going to do it over and over again. Justice Sotomayor asked exactly that same question of, like, what happens. And then he said, you know, the same answer. Like, he has to, the president would have to be impeached and convicted first. And basically, at that point, you know, Ellie and I were talking about this before, I thought this guy has made a bet. He's made a bet that if he just survives in the district court and the appellate court, he's going to be in front of a much more friendly audience.
Absolutely.
And he can make that argument and they will buy it and or throw him a lifeline. And sure enough, Justice Alito said, well, of course, that hypothetical is complicated because SEAL Team 6 has to obey the law. Like, unlike the president, SEAL Team 6 has to obey the law. And so that was what was alarming to me, is you had the highest court in the land sort of entertaining hypotheticals and having a serious argument that really normalizes extremism. And this is how, like, extremism manifests itself in nation states, right?
And which none
is to
of
say,
us
we're going to go more and more to the extreme. And then ordinary institutions of justice are going to accept that.
And none of us at this table believe that they believe any of these rules apply to Joe Biden. Okay, I'm going to hold you both when we come back on the other side of the break. When we come back, Ellie and Kenji are coming right back. So stay right there. More on this madness.
Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control our bodies and get the health care we need has been stolen from us. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, we can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
Back with me are my anger translators, Halima Stahl and Kenji Yoshino. What do we think they're going to do?
If you're a Republican on the Supreme Court and you want Donald Trump to win, what do you want to do? Do you want to give him absolute immunity forever? No. Why? Because Biden could use absolute immunity,
right,
and then he would never leave office. So that's kind of off the table.
Yeah.
What you want to do and what they're going to do is remand the case back to D.C., say that the D.C. Circuit didn't fully consider all the types of immunity.
In their 9-0 rule, in their unanimous ruling.
In their unanimous ruling, didn't fully consider. Do your homework again is what Roberts is going to say. You didn't show your work, right? Send it back to D.C. because why? That delays the trial indefinitely, because when you go back to D.C., they have to have another hearing. They have to make another ruling. They have to write another opinion. That opinion
will be
adverse to Trump, so they have to appeal. When does the Supreme Court get back to work? First Monday of October. Do you think they're going to schedule a hearing on the appeal before the election, after the first Monday of October? I don't think so. You think you're going to get a rule? And so you can't possibly have a trial before the election if you remand it back to D.C., which is why they're gonna remand it back to D.C. and let Trump skate until the next election.
And that kills both of Jack Smith cases.
That kills
at once.
That certainly kills the Eileen Cannon's already killing.
But she's killing that
the
herself. You're right.
She doesn't need extra
need
help.
Professor Yoshino, how do you think they're going to write it? Because it seemed like they were hinging a lot of this on official acts versus unofficial acts. And look, the liberal justices, even Amy Coney Barrett, tried to get them to explain how making fake electors is an official act. They wouldn't do it. How are they? Do you think they're going to write it?
Yeah, so I think that there were three distinctions that were salient going into this. There was a criminal versus civil, because mm-hmm. there is already broad civil immunity yeah. for official acts by the president, or Nixon versus Fitzgerald. Then I think that there was this official versus private acts. And then finally, there was a sitting versus former president, you know, distinction.
Yeah.
All of them, I think you're right, that the one that they're going to loft up is this official versus private.
Yeah.
I think they're going to do something very similar to what they did in the Mazars case a couple of years ago, where they remanded it. And it seemed like, you know, and slam against Trump, but ultimately it gave him like infinite amounts of time. So I think it's going to be some kind of four-part test, you know, for how to distinguish between official and private acts. You know, you didn't consider that, D.C. Circuit, so consider it and apply it to these facts.
I mean, the blasting game, but one of the cases they kept citing this blasting game case, which is ironically police officers who said they were harmed by Trump, and even though police officers enjoy complete immunity from prosecution, they're like, well, he harmed us, so then they want him prosecuted. So it's like there's a lot of like ironies baked in there. One of the other ironies is Brett Kavanaugh. Brett Kavanaugh worked for Ken Starr, and yet he was saying, if you make the prosecutor, you know, you can't, you're just going to hurt
your
family.
So one of the most risible things throughout the argument was Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, and Alito very worried about political prosecutors, very worried that presidents would be prosecuted for political means. And that was infuriating because Brett Kavanaugh came to Providence working for Ken Starr.
Yeah.
Ken Starr, who took a Bill Clinton land deal and dug it all the way into Monica Lewinsky's closet.
Yeah.
That Ken Starr, that Brett Kavanaugh, all of a sudden was concerned about political prosecutions. It was hypocritical at the maximum. And I keep coming back to this. Who's going to stop them, though? They act with impunity just like Trump acts with impunity.
Yeah.
Because just like Trump, they know nobody will stop them.
The thing that also was really infuriating listening to is that every time Justice Jackson or Justice Kagan or Justice Sotomayor tried to get into the actual facts of this case, and every time the lawyer for Ken Starr, the lawyer for Jack Smith's office tried to get into the substance, they would cut them off. They didn't want to hear the actual substance of this case. They said, let's talk theoretically.
I don't want to talk about that. The substance of this case.
Yeah.
I'm ruling for the future.
For the future. And what future? Because this is a future in which only Republican presidents would be kings. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a really important point. And just a couple of thoughts. I mean, one is that they insistently de-Trumped this case. So even if you listen to the oral arguments, they don't mention his name. They talk about the former president. They talk about the defendant, but they don't use the word Trump.
Yes.
And then similarly, they keep sort of trying to advert to a higher level of generality with regard to the office, saying we're making a ruling for the ages. You know, Kavanaugh says Gorsuch piles on by saying this is a rule for the future.
You know,
so this is a huge implications for executive power.
Yeah.
They're trying to take the focus off this case, this president, these facts. And as you say, the liberal justices are fighting this rear guard action to try and actually talk about what this case is about.
Sure.
And they're trying to abstract away from it.
Yeah. And then once we're in Trumplandia, they feel that they'll all be as if kings. It'll be wonderful. They think this future is going to be great under the Trump kingdom. Ellie Mistal, Professor Ken Giustino, I'll give people their honorifics. Thank you both very much. And up next, Trump has gone above and beyond to attack most of the witnesses in his hush money trial, except for former National Enquirer publisher David Pecker. Is it because Pecker has something on Trump that he doesn't want going public? Who knows? Stay with us.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You can start your day off right when you find a professional on Angie to get your plumbing right first. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
far? When was the last time you spoke to him?
No, he's been very nice. I mean, he's been, David's been very nice. He's a nice guy.
Huh, you have to wonder, with Donald Trump's penchant for attacking just about every person involved in his various civil and criminal trials, judges, prosecutors, witnesses, why is it that he's laid off David Pecker, the former publisher of the National Enquirer tabloid? Especially since Pecker's testimony today was quite revelatory. He shared for the first time that he signed a cooperation letter with the Manhattan DA's office back in October of 2019. That was even before Alvin Bragg was elected district attorney. Pecker also admitted that he was well aware that he was breaking campaign finance and election laws when he acted on his catch-and-kill agreement with Donald Trump and Michael Cohen, having cut similar deals with, of all people, Trump's apprentice rival and fellow Republican showbiz performer-turned-politician, Arnold Schwarzenegger. What Pecker's testimony provided to jurors was how involved Trump was in the scheme, how much access Pecker had to the Trump world, including in the White House, and how much Trump relied on Pecker to look out for him as his eyes and ears. Most importantly, Pecker told the court that this was all done not to protect Trump's family or Melania. No, no, no. Pecker said Trump never mentioned his family. It was all to protect Trump's campaign. Pecker will be back on the witness stand again tomorrow to continue cross-examination. But after today, I wonder if Trump still thinks he's a nice guy. Joining me now is Lachlan Cartwright, who worked for David Pecker as executive editor of the National Enquirer. He's now a special correspondent for The Hollywood Reporter. Suzanne Craig, New York Times investigative reporter and MSNBC contributor. And Danny Savalos, criminal defense attorney and MSNBC legal analyst, who's lucky enough not to have Trump as a client because you'd never get paid. Welcome to the show, Lachlan Cartwright. Talk to me a little bit. What was sort of interesting to me was this transition from Pecker being willing. He wanted to help. He wanted to be helpful to the campaign. But as soon as he realized that he wasn't getting paid back for having fronted $150,000 and promised Susan, the Playboy model.
Karen McDougal,
and promised he was going to put on the cover and do all these things for her. And then he realized he wasn't getting paid back. He was like, I'm not doing anymore. Is that kind of the sequence of how it went?
He actually said on the stand today that he's not a bank.
I'm not a bank. And
that's kind of almost why we're here. It's because of the Stormy Daniels, you know, payoff, because he didn't want to front that money because he had already fronted up the $30,000 for the doorman, Dino the doorman.
That's right. Yep.
That catch and kill that we did. And then he'd also have to put up the money for Karen McDougal, the $150,000. So by the time Stormy Daniels comes on the scene,
yeah,
which is straight after the Access Hollywood tape, where the campaign is panicking, they don't want any more adverse press, particularly a sort of tale coming out from a porn star.
Yeah.
That then transaction is then put back onto Michael Cohen and onto Trump because Pecker doesn't want to front up any more money. And what I found extraordinary today, there were many extraordinary moments, but you know, one of them, and I think this was brilliant by the prosecution, really showing how the deal was structured with Karen McDougal. AMI, David Pecker, knew that this was a campaign finance violation.
Yeah.
So the way they structured that contract with for these fitness columns, which I actually had to then assign a reporter to ghostwrite them. And Karen McDougal was actually unhappy with her fitness column, the first one. She didn't like it because the ghostwriter had mentioned the benefits of vitamin D in the column. So Karen McDougal called up David Pecker and said, I want a new ghostwriter, which David Pecker actually spoke about on the stand today. Another surreal moment. But it just really kind of drove home for me, Joy, that the way they structured that agreement, they were aware of the campaign finance.
And so they wanted to be paid back because they actually didn't want to show it on their books, right? They didn't want to show it in their business records. They were hoping Donald Trump would personally give back the money, the $150,000. They were going to deduct $25,000 to say, okay, that's what she's actually getting paid to be our fitness course columnist, and you're just assigning some real person to write it. And then the rest of it was going to come back from Trump. And when it didn't come back from, they were like, we're not giving out any more money. Talk to me about why David Pecker's limit, moral limit, was a porn star on the cover. He was willing to say Ted Cruz was sleeping with all sorts of women. He was willing to say lascivious things about him and put that on the cover. Why not a porn star relationship?
Again, it comes back to money. We were talking about how tight-fisted he was. He was worried about blowback from Walmart. Walmart was one of our biggest outlets, distributors that put the Inquirer on all their newsstands. And he was concerned if a porn star was featured in the Inquirer or had anything to do with the Inquirer, there'd be blowback from Walmart because so much money AMI made from Walmart.
So you can say Ted Cruz's father killed JFK, but you can't have a porn star on the cover.
I think also they were worried Walmart may learn about the payment, right? I think it was both. Yeah, I kind of got that.
I want to go into a little bit because there was also the sense that the Wall Street Journal would learn about the deal with Karen McDougal, that they were that once it started to get out and her story starts to leak out,
right. They,
you know, you see Pecker start to panic that maybe the way he's doing business is getting out, which is also, I found kind of interesting.
Right. And they did eventually learn about it. I mean, they reported it famously. Yeah. There was a lot of panic about how this was all going to.
It was all going to get out.
Get out. Yeah.
Do you think on the Trump, so in the cross-examination, which isn't finished, it started.
Right.
One of the things that definitely is hanging out there is the idea that this was just a standard way of doing business. There was nothing special about the Trump deal. They went to the Arnold Schwarzenegger deal. And this was on direct examination, that they did a thing to bury negative stories about Arnold Schwarzenegger when he ran for governor of California. Not quite the same, because they weren't doing breaking campaign finance law, right?
Yeah, not just Arnold Schwarzenegger, but lots of celebrities got hit with the sex shrapnel today on the stand. I mean, my goodness. And those were just the ones that came out in questioning. And it really has me wondering, I mean, how much more does David Pecker know about celebrities? And maybe, just maybe, that's why Donald Trump is going so easy on David Pecker, which then makes an even crazier proposition that we are here on trial because of Donald Trump's misbehavior with women. Does that mean there's even more that David Pecker knows that he's just not letting on that isn't coming out in this trial? So when it comes to cross-examination, I expected there are really only a couple inroads they can make with David Pecker. They can challenge his memory. They can challenge whether or not he's motivated to be there. He's a classic cooperating witness. Now we learn today he has not one, but two immunity deals. And you cross-examine him about that. You say, you're here to please these prosecutors who gave you that deal.
Predating Alvin Bragg.
Right. You're giving them the benefit of the bargain. You've made a deal, just like you made a deal with, that you say you made a deal. You definitely made a deal with these prosecutors, and you're giving them what they want.
Yeah.
Those are really the two main avenues on cross-examination.
Yeah.
You can expect more of that tomorrow. But the main key that's very specific to these facts that you asked about is that they're trying to show that this is something that was going on for decades, literally decades, and it went on with other celebrities.
Is it?
So I can only really speak from my tenure there, which is 2014 through to 2017.
Yeah.
But yes, there were other FOPs, there were other protected species, and one of those was spoken about today, and that's Ari Emanuel. And so clients of Ari Emanuel, this was spoken about in court today, clients of Ari Emanuel
were protected in the same way. But here's the question. I'm going to hold this to the other side of the break, because were there any other clients who were running for office and for whom there was a campaign finance?
Correct.
I'm going to ask you, hold your answer, because we're going to make that a tease. How about that? Lachlan, Suzanne, and Danny are all sticking with us for much more on Trump's legal troubles. We'll be right back. With me, we've just been chattering throughout the entire commercial break. Lachlan Cartwright, Suzanne Craig, Danny Sabalos, finish your answer that you started before the break.
Yeah, there were other protected species at AMI, and I think that the difference here is they weren't running for president.
Yeah,
so
Harvey Weinstein
was, was one of them. He was a FOP, and so AMI had a
what
business
is a FOP?
A friend of Pecker.
Ah, gotcha.
So a friend of Pecker means you're basically on a no-fly list. Which means that you're a protected species and there are no negative stories about you. And Harvey Weinstein inked a deal with AMI to produce something called Radar TV, which never came to fruition.
Yeah.
But it did involve a lot of meetings between Dylan Howard and Harvey Weinstein. And then requests came my way for damaging information on women that went on to accuse Harvey Weinstein of sexual
assault. And now
assault.
He's free of one of some of his charges. Let's talk about this. These various meetings that Pecker winds up in the White House.
Well, there were just a couple really memorable meetings that David Pecker talked about today. One of them involved a meeting right after Donald Trump is elected, and he gets a call from Rona, Donald Trump's secretary, saying, President-elect would like to see you.
Yeah.
So David Pecker comes over to Trump Tower, and he's a bit overwhelmed when he gets there by all this security. And And Jared Kushner sees him and taps him on the shoulder and says, come with me. And he escorts David Pecker up to Donald Trump's office. And David Pecker walks in and he sees this incredible assembly of men. Like it was
James Comey,
like the head of the FBI is there, Rex Priebus is there. There's this group of people. They're talking about government business. And Donald Trump introduces David Pecker to the room and he says he knows more than anybody in this,
room.
And it was a joke, as David Pecker pointed out on Nobody Laughed.
Nobody laughed. Well, especially Comey. Comey's probably like, how is this my life?
And then, though, just to show you how obsessed he was with Karen McDougal, he calls the the National Enquirer is standing there and he calls him over to the side and he said, how's our girl doing?
How's our girl?
Yeah.
There seemed to be a real obsession that Donald Trump had with Karen McDougal.
Yes, he seemed to have brought her up and followed up and asked, how's our girl? And so, I mean, he was interested enough, or he may have just been interested and in asking in a way, hey, she's still quiet,
well,
isn't she?
Well, that was
she?
Another I mean, meeting sort of, that they had at the White House, where he goes to the White House for his thank you dinner. And they're to get Donald Trump and David Pecker together. They're talking. There was this iconic photo that was shown of the two of them in the back. They're walking down a corridor. It's a black and white photo. And David Pecker said what they were talking about was Karen McDougal.
Was Karen McDougal.
And Donald Trump asked how she is. And David Pecker said, she's fine. She's quiet.
Yeah. Talk about the David Pecker-Trump relationship, because when I was in court, I got the sense he reveres him. Today, he said he still considers him a friend.
A friend and mentor.
Joy. Yeah.
And there's these interactions I keep watching in court where, as David Pecker sort of, you know, exits through this sort of trap door in the middle of the courtroom, he goes past where Donald Trump is sitting. And there's been some interactions where they've acknowledged each other and you know, smiled together. But, you know, it was a very close friendship, and it was a friendship
of
favors and both ways. And something that I'm sort of really interested in here, and I was hoping we were going to get to it today, at that dinner, and as has been reported and as I'm aware of, there were discussions at that dinner at the White House about helping to facilitate David Pecker with deals with the Saudis. And David Pecker went on.
Pardon?
David Pecker went on to fly to Riyadh, and there were discussions about helping AMI, which was always in financial difficulties, with facilitating with deals with the Saudis. And so I was hoping we were going to get to a bit more of that today.
Yeah.
And maybe that will emerge.
Because so that's the quid pro quo.
That's one of the quid pro quos. But everyone keeps saying to me, well, what was in it for David Pecker?
Yeah.
And this was
money.
This was a correct.
Saudi
keep
money.
Coming back to the money.
It was like a long game though, too. That's what we're sort of learning. It wasn't an immediate quid pro quo. It was sort of like we may learn shortly that in some ways it was just having access to Donald Trump.
He wanted to be one of the oligarchs.
He wanted to be important to these people, and it benefited him financially. And that can be the quid pro quo that the people are trying to establish here.
And this is kind of the sort of Trump ethos, right? It's selling access to himself is kind of the way that he rolls. And that is another example.
You saw that. I just thought when you said that of just even the hotel that he owned.
Bingo.
In Washington.
Yeah.
Yeah, the old post office, all that money.
That he was leasing from the federal government.
And a lot of foreign governments were doing business there, renting rooms there.
Yeah.
You saw at Mar-a-Lago, you know, most pretty much all Donald Trump's businesses
are done there.
They lose money. But Mar-a-Lago, when he became president, they upped the membership fees. They make money off of that way.
Does David Pecker have dirt on Donald Trump?
Well, the dirt that he has on Donald Trump is out there.
Well, the reason I asked is because there was this question of the boxes. Trump is obsessed with the boxes.
So,
and there were boxes of items that he wanted.
So I can sort of give a bit of insight into that, because that safe that has been referred to a couple of times was my footrest that housed the Dino Sugiudin contract, which I famously got his contract out when I was helping the Wall Street Journal as a source because they wanted the names of the love child. And the safe wouldn't close. So I had to sit there, turn the TV up loud enough to hammer the safe closed, but I
never let you leave.
I want to stress that the files that
I'm following you home.
The material that was the material, the files that they're referring to were old clips, old files, old tips. The revelations that are out there have been out there. And there was a stunning moment for me today, Joy, where after the Wall Street Journal report, the Karen McDougal deal, just days before the election, Donald Trump is furious with David Pecker and says it's someone on on the inside. Oh, right. And I was one of the sources for that story. And the person who said to the Wall Street Journal, this was a catch and kill. And if you use this term, it'll give me some cover. Wow. So Donald Trump was right about that. There was
good
someone
gracious.
On the
side. We are all following you home. Lachlan Cartwright, we all live at your house now. Suzanne Craig, Danny Sabalos, who will be at your home later on tonight. Thank you all very much. Amazing. Up next, pro-Palestinian protests and arrests have continued to escalate on college campuses throughout the country. We'll have the latest from NBC News reporter Antonia Hilton. Wow. A wave of nationwide student activism is meeting an increasingly hostile, over-the-top police presence that's starting to feel kind of like hysteria. More than 400 demonstrators have been taken into police custody in just the last 8 days, including 57 people in a particularly violent scene at the University of Texas at Austin, 108 at Emerson College in Boston, and 93 at the University of Southern California. At Columbia University, which saw the first wave of student suspensions and arrests, kicking off the nationwide movement. Student organizers are now saying that negotiations with the university have resumed after a 30-hour pause. Joining me now is NBC News correspondent Antonia Hilton, who was at Columbia University today as demonstrations entered their eighth day. Antonia, you've been doing fantastic reporting, so I just want you to say more. Tell me what you're seeing.
Well, what I'm seeing is a campus that is extremely tense right now. These negotiations are ongoing. Everyone's at the table at the moment, but they are incredibly fragile. And I'm not sure people fully understand that. You know, as you mentioned, people walked away from the table at one point. Students tell me that they were threatened with the idea of the National Guard coming to campus, which made them lose trust, lose faith in administrators that they know. Now they're back at the table. But even as they negotiate, these students are in the encampment training their friends about what to do if the NYPD comes back tonight or tomorrow, what to do if you're pepper sprayed, if you've never experienced tear gas. And so they are operating under the assumption that things could fall apart again. And that's why this is so sensitive here. What I've been told is that by the early hours tomorrow morning, if we're not hearing many updates, that's not going to be a good sign.
We are just, what, a week away from the anniversary of Kent State. I mean, you know, authorities in this country have fired on children, fired on students. It's happened before. This is part of our history. But the other part of our history is that young people, when faced with the kind of threats and bullying that you're seeing on all of these campuses, they're not going to back down. This is like the 60s. They're just going to keep going, right? I mean, these students are dug in.
Oh, it's like gasoline to a fire. That is what I consistently hear, not just from students at Columbia. I'm still in touch with students that I have covered at Cornell and at Harvard who say that they've been watching what's happening here in New York, and it's inspired them to grow or create new encampments.
Yeah.
You know, if the idea from the administration at Columbia was we're going to bring the NYPD in, it's going to squash these protests, and we're going to have an easy commencement, that is not how this is going to turn out. Although I have been told by Jelani Cobb, who's the dean of the Columbia Journalism School there, that the National Guard is off the table.
And the core of this is what they're seeing in Gaza. They're seeing it on social media. They're seeing it with their own eyes. They're upset about it. But the protests have been peaceful, right? Because the demonization of these kids is that they, the encampment kid, the encampment students, I didn't call them kids, are the ones doing anti-Semitic things and screaming anti-Semitic things. Are they?
Let me clear this up. So this is not a black and white, us versus them, very easy story. This is a story where when you go visit the encampments, you see significant numbers of Jewish students, visibly Jewish students, taking part in pro-Palestinian protests, holding a Seder. They are advocating for Palestinians and for divestment and a ceasefire. Right now, on the campus, there is a group of Christian nationalist associated pastors, people who are associated with organizations that believe only Christians should hold any political office in the United States, who are advocating for Israel. There are Arab Israelis that I have met who are advocating for Israel. So this is a situation where it's not very easy to figure out just who is to blame, who is on what side here. But what I can tell you is I have been going to this campus pretty much every day since last week, since all this started. And I have yet to meet a student who was engaged in the kind of anti-Semitic threats that we have seen online. That is not to say they're not existent. I have seen it. There's a guy out on Broadway right now. On Broadway, holding an incredibly anti-Semitic sign, but he's not a student. I have not been able to find a student's name and attach them to one of these incidents. And that's why I've urged reporters to be very careful, because this is not a story of Jewish versus Muslim students or black versus white students, because so often people frame it that way.
Yep.
This is a story where if you're going to go to this campus and cover it, you need to understand who you are talking to. What organizations are they associated with, and what do they really believe before you broadcast, say, 10 seconds of images or That's photos right. that you've taken? Make it very clear the context and the story that you are telling. Because when you actually talk to students, what they tell me is they are a very different generation. They are seeing images of children dying on their phones. They are horrified. There are kids who are political science majors and have yeah. studied this for years.
Yeah.
And the kids who are getting into this just in the last few days because of what they've seen yeah. transpire around the country.
This is why I love a real journalist. Antonia Hilton, you are actually there doing the work. This is what we need journalism to do. Don't just make up stuff to bully these kids based on what you think. Go down there and report or rely on an actual reporter. Antonia Hilton, thank you, my sister. Well done. And that is tonight's readout.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.